My name is Kim Glass. I'm the Executive Director of the Blue Green Alliance, and we're a national partnership of labor unions and environmental organizations. Thanks for joining us this morning. Today we're here to discuss this groundbreaking new report. It's called Making the Grade, How Investments in America's Infrastructure Benefit Our Economy and Our Environment. It explores how job creation and carbon reduction potential if we create a strong approach to upgrading our infrastructure systems, such as electricity, rails, schools, dams, and ports. From Los Angeles to Pittsburgh to New York City, our infrastructure is broken and failing to make the grade. This report illustrates the opportunities, both economical and environmental, that exist if we bring our infrastructure from the D plus, the grade that the American Society of Civil Engineers rated our infrastructure systems in 2013, to a B grade. Achieving a B grade infrastructure over the next 10 years could create an additional 2.7 million jobs across the U.S. economy and increase GDP by $377 billion over 10 years versus a business-as-usual approach. The common sense solution proposed in this report also has potential to improve efficiency, reducing carbon pollution and other greenhouse gases driving climate change. Some examples include performing efficiency retrofits of schools could create an estimated 447,000 jobs across the U.S. economy. It would be good for our environment. Green schools use an average of 33% less energy and 32% less water. Getting our drinking and clean water systems to a B grade over the next 10 years could create an estimated 139,000 jobs across the U.S. economy. Just a 5% reduction in water distribution system leakage could save 270 million gallons per day of water. Getting our power and electrical grid to a B grade over the next 10 years could support or create an estimated 180,000 jobs across the U.S. economy. It would also help us meet the EPA's clean power plan. It's time to invest now in our infrastructure in order to cut down on inefficiencies and to create and maintain family-sustaining jobs for working people. The report can be found online at www.bluegreenalliance.org/making the grade. Now we'll hear from Leo Girard, the president of the United Steelworkers. Leo?
Thanks, Kim. Let me start by congratulating the authors of the report because it's very well researched and very detailed and very specific about the great things that could be accomplished versus doing nothing, which is what's happening now in Congress. And let me say that we need Congress to pass long-term, fully funded transportation bill this year, whether they do it in the lame duck session or sooner than the next, or sooner in the next Congress, it needs to be done. The fact is that America's infrastructure is the backbone of our economy. Kim touched on a number of issues very quickly, but if we look at any range of issues, whether it's fixing the current grid that is inefficient and in fact loses 5 to 20% of the energy that's put on the grid, and if we want to do renewable energy, whether it's wind or solar, we need to have a grid that can move that energy from one place to another without losing so much. Our roads and transit systems are dilapidated. We have 86,000 bridges or more that are inefficient. Let me just say that it is an opportunity to build a supply chain for America for all of the infrastructure we need and to start building that supply chain, whether it's for transit, whether it's for schools, whether it's for clean water, transmission of electricity, as I said. Kim made the point on schools. But think of how much better it would be in our classrooms if our kids were in energy-efficient classes. Think about how much better it would be getting our kids to school if the transit systems were working. Think about how much less water we would waste if we had water systems that were efficient. All of these things, you'll hear some people crying that we can't afford it. In fact, the opposite is true. We can't afford not to do it. America's infrastructure is at either a D minus or a D plus. Just bringing it to a B would create over 1.4 million jobs just in transit over a 10-year period. So if we had a comprehensive long-term strategy to look at our transit systems, our rail systems, our school systems, our energy grid, our water systems, if we had a long-term strategy on those put together, and we had a domestic content requirement in that, we could do magic for the economy, and we could do equally good magic for the environment. Every one of these things that I've referenced or are referenced in the report actually not only create jobs, not only help create a supply chain, not only help to bring America's infrastructure to an acceptable level, but it does a tremendous amount of good for the taking greenhouse gases and carbon out of the air and creating an energy-efficient environmental standard. And with the EPA's strategy, this plays right into the hand where we can help meet the EPA standards while at the same time creating millions of jobs. So, Kim, the steelworkers, and as chair of the Blue-Green Alliance, I'm excited by the report and, again, want to congratulate the authors. And we need to mobilize and get to work so that the Congress actually gets off their butt and does something. So thanks, Kim. Back to you.
Thanks, Leo. And now we're going to hear from Peter Lerner from NRDC. He serves as the executive director, and he will speak on the need to address climate change and how infrastructure investments can impact climate change. Peter?
Thanks, Kim, and I'll echo Leo's thanks to the excellent authors of this report on our infrastructure system. Infrastructure is really what we need to do to get to our jobs and live our lives, but too often we take it for granted. We generally only think about our roads when we are in traffic or when we hit a pothole. Or a friend of mine who was in a water supply noted that the only time they could get politicians or the public to think about the water system or the sewer system is when a sewer line breaks. This report is trying to change that and urge us to think about the infrastructure now. If we can address the infrastructure, as Leo said, we can create a lot of new jobs and indirectly create opportunities to revitalize our economy. But I'm going to focus in particular on the opportunity of infrastructure to fix and lower some of our carbon emissions. Travel delays, for example, by congestion, not only frustrate us, drive us crazy, it increases and wastes time, but it increases our fuel costs and it increases emissions. If you've ever had a car that shows your instantaneous mileage when you're in traffic, your instantaneous mileage is very hard as you're going nowhere. These are the kind of roadblocks that are happening all the time, and we can address that by fixing our transportation system. Transportation right now counts for close to a third, maybe about 30% of our total greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S. So if we're going to address climate change, we have to address the transportation system. We are delighted and working hard with the president and many others on his clean power plan to address emissions from power plants, but we have to make the transportation system cleaner. The president, a couple of years ago, of course, made great progress in getting cleaner cars that will go twice as far in a gallon of gas and save us all money, but cleaner cars aren't enough. We have to fix the gridlock, and we have to make sure we all have access to transit. And that is what this report shows, that if we can fix the roads and allow traffic to move more quickly and increase transit that so many of us use to get to and from work, to and from school, or wherever else, we can dramatically reduce the greenhouse gas emissions from the transportation sector and, by the way, increase our quality of life. Our electricity system is the same, and while the power plan, the clean power plan of the president will address emissions from power sector, all these plants are linked together by an electricity grid. Those wires were often laid or strung from pole to pole decades and decades ago, and we have an antiquated electricity infrastructure that, again, causes us to waste electricity, increase emissions needlessly, and frankly lowers all of us our productivity. And so this report looks at the opportunities both to create jobs and reduce emissions and also, as I said before, increasing quality of life by improving our transportation system. That allows new power plants to feed into the grid. That allows existing power plants to be used more efficiently. It allows us to link rooftop solar and distributed generation all into one smoothly functioning, efficient system. And as we make the grid better and smarter with technologies that allow the grid to talk to itself, all of these make opportunities to dramatically increase our quality of life and dramatically reduce emissions. we all know on this phone call, and frankly, everybody except in a few small places, that the threat of climate change is real, the impacts of climate change are real, and they're today. The Pentagon just released a report this week noting that climate change is an imminent threat. We have to address those, and we address those by reducing emissions and making a more resilient transportation and electricity system, and that's what fixing our infrastructure will achieve. So back to Kim Glass, but again, thanks to the report authors, and we hope this gets a lot of attention because infrastructure is too easy to ignore, but when you ignore it, we ignore it at our peril.
All right, thank you, Peter. Now we're going to hear from Mike Langford, the national president of the Utility Workers Union of America. Mike?
All right, thank you, Kim. And as utility workers, our members work in all these aspects of gas, electric, and water, so they know the conditions of these systems, and they put their lives at stake every day working in these old antiquated systems, and they can firsthand knowledge of what's needed out there, so they're a wealth of information. But as a changing climate is a threat to our health, to our communities, and to the economy, and we cannot afford to wait any longer to make the repairs we know will better protect communities in the short term and spur economic growth in the short term. Between 2011 and 2013, the U.S. spent $188 billion on disaster relief, rebuilding our communities after extreme weather events. Moving forward with the right infrastructure investments today can prevent these costs from growing in the future. 2 years ago, utility workers from around the country were at home with no idea that just in a few days they'd be working to get the power back on, stop gas leaks, and return life to a new, more cautious normal for millions of Americans. Hurricane Sandy had hit land, and utility workers from around the country were called to help. I'm proud of our members that help repair and rebuild the systems that people rely on every day. 2 years later, though, these same workers see systems that are breaking down in their own communities. We all have a stake in our nation's infrastructure systems and domestic manufacturing. The union members especially play a vital role in the direction we're headed. We're already seeing the impact that outdated infrastructure is having on our communities. Each day, an average of 850 water main breaks, leaking more than 7 billion gallons of clean water every day. I mean, that's insane. That's ridiculous. Inefficient and outdated infrastructure isn't just expensive to fix. It's also contributing to climate change. For example, to replace the water leaking from pipes around the city, we're using additional energy to pump them. That's wasting energy that wouldn't have to be used if our water systems were updated. These systems are not prepared for increasingly severe and more frequent storms and droughts that we are experiencing. In addition to that, they are outdated and in some cases can contribute to even more carbon pollutants. Investing in these systems now will not only cut carbon pollutants, it will create good union jobs, making the steel to rebuild bridges and rails, making the concrete that will be poured and repair our roads and buildings and components and materials used to generate renewable energies. We need action at every level to tackle this problem. Today, we're clearly and strongly laying out the problems, suggesting a solution, and beginning our work to build the consensus needed to get this done. The size and scope of this problem should not stop us from doing this. Instead, we should work together and turn around and turn this problem into an opportunity. I mean, if you think about all this stuff, it's just a common sense approach to things. It's really a simple fix, and it would put literally hundreds of thousands of people back to work. So, Kim, I'm going to turn this back over to you.
Thanks, Mike. And we're about to hear from Brian Palish. He's the Managing Director of the American Society of Civil Engineers. Brian?
Thanks. Sorry about that, Kim. I was unmuting my phone. I did my job first. thank you all very much for having us on here today, and I'm pleased that folks are starting to listen to the message and listen to the report card grades and start to take action and to put together a systematic discussion about how we can actually fix our nation's infrastructure. As a number of the speakers have already said, repairing America's infrastructure will help us remain economically competitive, and in fact, some of the changes we'd like to see will actually make us more economically competitive. and frankly, it will make us more environmentally sustainable. Every 4 years, the American Society of Civil Engineers releases our report card for America's infrastructure that depicts the condition and performance of the nation's infrastructure in the simple and familiar form of a school report card by assigning letter grades to each type of infrastructure. America's infrastructure still isn't making the grade, however. Our D-plus grade in 2013 is just further proof that we need to make these investments in the systems that we rely on every day for power, water, to get from place to place, to move goods around our country, and so much more. Civil engineers see the neglect and the challenges facing our infrastructure, like roads and bridges, the power grid, wastewater management systems, and more. That's what led us to release the first report card way back in 1998. We're concerned about the direction we've been heading. When we look at waterways and levees, we give grades of D-. Roads, transit, and wastewater systems and drinking water systems all got D grades. Our nation's aviation system got a grade of a D. The nation's bridges, which were already mentioned, got a grade of a C+, but that still is not making the grade when we consider the fact that there are nearly 70,000 structurally deficient bridges around the country. And frankly, as you can see from those grades, it's really nothing to brag about and nothing that we'd want our kids to bring home and as they come home from school with report cards. We are, however, optimistic that we can once again rebuild the nation's infrastructure like my grandfather's generation did. If we make the right investments and use every dollar productively, we can make the infrastructure stronger, more sustainable, and ready to serve the nation and our economy. But repairing the systems that we rely on every day has to be a priority. And as a number of the speakers said, and I'd like to echo what Leo said, Congress has the chance to do this in surface transportation if they start focusing on this during the lame duck session of Congress. We like to say that it's going to be time to fix the trust fund during that December timeframe, and Congress does have that opportunity and should take the opportunity once they come back to do the work of the nation. Now back to Kim. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Brian. And just to recap before we open it up for questions, this report illustrates the opportunities, both economical and environmental, where we could benefit from bringing our infrastructure from the D-plus grade the American Society of Civil Engineers rated our infrastructure in 2013 to a B grade. Achieving a B grade infrastructure over the next 10 years could create an additional 2.7 million jobs across the U.S. economy and increase GDP by $377 billion over 10 years. The common sense solutions proposed in this report also have potential to improve efficiency, reduce carbon pollution, other greenhouse gases driving climate change. Nearly 2 years ago, we all saw the devastating effects of Hurricane Sandy. This report is timely to remind our friends in Congress that they need to get busy and get acting on an important investment infrastructure issue. So with that, the report can be found online at www.bluegreenalliance.org/makingthegrade. And now we'll open it up to some questions. I'll hand it back to the operator.
The floor is now open for questions. If you do have a question, please press the number 7 on your telephone keypad. Again, that's the number 7. Please hold while we wait for the first question. The first question comes from Sean Riley. Sean, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for doing the call. Just want to be clear on how you propose to pay for this. If I'm reading the report correctly, is it accurate to say that you would want to borrow more than $1.6 trillion through purchase of Treasury bonds, essentially by the federal government to make these investments?
If folks want to...
Who's speaking, please?
Leo Gerard. Who are you with?
Environment and Energy Publishing.
Okay. Let me... I don't know if one of the folks want to give a technical answer, but let me give a political answer. This is the cheapest you can get money for the last couple of years that I can remember in my adult lifetime. And for the government to either find a way to fund this by using Treasury bills or some other way, this is the most efficient investments that we can make. These investments are going to allow our productivity to grow. These investments made the right way with requests for domestic content in these component buildings, we would end up with huge revenue from the jobs we would create. Remember, every worker that would get a job is also going to pay taxes. And we were able to find billions, if not trillions, to bail out bad banks. We ought to be able to find the same thing to fix a failing infrastructure that we've heard a number of people talk about the deficits we have in infrastructure. You never hear them talk about the deficits in infrastructure. You might hear them talk about a deficit that we owe for fighting wars that we didn't need. So I'm pretty frustrated with the process and want to aggressively certainly mobilize steelworkers and others to fight for a long-term infrastructure bill, not only a highway transit bill, but a long-term infrastructure commitment. We heard, I think it was last spring, the Congress talk about funding for 2 years. No one's going to make a massive investment in new plant and equipment if they don't know what's going to happen at 2 years and 1 month or 3 years. So we need long-term planning and long-term investment, and I view these investments as paying back quickly by putting people back to work who will pay taxes.
Thank you.
Well, this is Mike Langford. Let me just add to that. I mean, if you think about in the natural gas, there's so much unaccountable gas that escapes due to leaky pipes and valves. And the savings alone on just replacing these will more than pay for themselves over the time, and also, and it prevents all this methane emission into the atmosphere. So there's ways, and just by upgrading the grid itself with the lack of lost power, I mean, that's less generation. That's just more wise use of the energy itself. And the same for water. So, I mean, once you start adding these things up, really the cost becomes not a factor, because you're gaining in the long run. And the consumers are paying literally pennies to make these repairs. I mean, if you think about, people don't have a problem spending $150 to $250 a month for 1,000 TV channels and watch three or four of them maybe. So why can't we put a couple of pennies into reliable water, gas, and electric? It just, to me, it's too common. It's just too simple, but we make it complicated. Not we.
And let me. This is an interesting point Mike just raised. It's Leo Gerard again. We never had anybody yet factor in the cost of the energy we lose off the grid because the energy's the grid's inefficient. We've never had anybody factor in the cost that we have for the lost water and the water treatment plants that may process water that gets lost or not process at all. The energy that Mike just referred to with natural gas that leaks, and methane is the most vicious of the greenhouse gases. So these things have to be put in their right context. It's like buying a house. You buy it, you have a deficit, but you're going to pay it off over time, and then once it's paid off, you've got an asset. We need to invest in our infrastructure as if it was an asset.
Thanks, Leo. Any other questions?
We have a question on the line from David Moberg of In These Times. Again, if you do have a question, please press the number 7 on your telephone keypad. David, go ahead.
Yeah, this is a question for anyone who wants to address it. Could you comment on what you see as the major obstacles, political, I assume, to getting major infrastructure legislation through Congress now?
My answer will be really short. Republicans.
Anyone have a longer version?
Well, this is Peter Lehner from NRDC. I think the challenge is, as I mentioned earlier, that infrastructure is something that we all need, but it is a long-term investment. It's just like education. It's just like protecting our health through protecting our environment and addressing climate change. Long-term issues are not, it seems, very popular among those who are concerned about the very short term. And that's a real problem, because as our infrastructure deteriorates, we are lagging further and further behind other countries that are addressing their infrastructure, their transportation infrastructure, their electrical and energy infrastructure. And those countries are getting very significant competitive advantages in comparison to the United States. So we lose out in the economic global competition. We lose out in the opportunity to be the leading innovators and job creators. And if we don't think long term, we will suffer both in the long term and in the short term. But right now, it's hard to get our politicians to think past tomorrow, if you did that.
David, it's Leo again. My comment wasn't meant to be flippant. If we look at what's happened in the last 6 years with this president, every time he's brought a jobs bill, an infrastructure bill, that would have started us down the right path, Republicans either filibustered when we had a small majority, or in the House they've not let it leave the House. So that's really fundamental. But I also don't want to leave some Democrats off the hook. For example, we've now got in the state of Massachusetts the governor touting a new transit bill for his red line, blue line. Instead of making sure that an American company would get that and that the components for that transit system would be built in America, they awarded it to a state-owned enterprise from China who's never built a transit system. And so whether they claim we'll get 60% or whether we'll get any percent of that supply chain is debatable. So one of the shortcomings is to convince some of the so-called moderate Democrats to get on side at the state level. That's why we need people like Mike Michaud who understand it, and Senator or Governor Quinn who understands domestic manufacturing and bridges and infrastructure. So.
All right. Are there any further questions?
We do have a question on the line from Ben Hulak of ClimateWire. Ben, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. It seems like during extreme natural disasters, such as Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Sandy, the low-income communities suffer the most, specifically with transit and with just utility issues. How would your plan address, and I apologize, I've yet to read through the report, but could you just address how your proposal would try to mitigate issues that low-income communities face during extreme weather events?
Hi, this is Kim from the Blue Green Alliance. Our report really takes a look at the job creation and investment necessary for these infrastructure improvements. It's also looking at where consumers can actually save when you do make these infrastructure improvements. Obviously, we know the devastating effects that major weather events can have on low-income communities. And I don't think you'll find a person on this phone that isn't deeply committed to providing what we can to low-income and disadvantaged communities. And this is a way to really highlight these infrastructure issues. I mean, we are at a D-plus infrastructure system overall. This needs to be addressed. Too many low-income communities especially have dilapidated bridges and water infrastructure systems that has a real effect on their bottom line in terms of what they can pay for at the end of the month to both a utility company or whether it's, meeting their daily bills. So highlighting this issue today, talking about Congress needs to get their act together and get this done is what this report is all about.
If I can add, this is Peter Lehner from NRDC. We are acutely aware that many of the upgrades that are available that we are working on generally jump past low-income communities. So we and others are putting in extra effort to ensure, for example, that state low and energy efficiency programs specifically target and give a lot of attention to low-income communities where the energy portion of their living expenses can often be much higher than it is for middle-income or upper-income families. And it's more complicated often from an energy perspective because those communities may be more challenging administratively and more spread out. But we have to make an extra effort to make sure that the benefits of better transportation, energy efficiency, and clean energy, as well as other things, do get to low-income communities.
I think there's one more question. We'll take one more question.
Yes, the last question comes from Sean Riley of Environment Energy Publishing. Sean?
On this report or the conclusions of this report, either from a political standpoint or in any other area?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the whole question.
Yeah, do you plan any follow? What comes next? Do you plan any follow up to try and pursue the recommendations in the report?
Absolutely. I mean, I think this report is a huge vehicle to drive a lot of conversations, both at the administration level as well as with members of Congress. I think it's important to highlight these issues. We have the 2-year anniversary of Hurricane Sandy coming up. We felt that this was timely to get this out there to drive a real change both on the state level and the federal level to addressing these issues. So absolutely. These are issues we've been talking about for years. We quantified it in our report in terms of job creation, investment that is required. We will be doing and will continue to very hardly push infrastructure funding that is necessary to put people back to work in this country.
Let me add to what Kim said. It's Leo Girard. Our Blue-Green Alliance, through our partners in the labor movement and the environmental movement, will all be participating in the dissemination of this report. And I know that I can, on this piece, I'll speak for the steelworkers. We'll be, after the election and we see what's going on in the lame duck, we're going to be aggressively pushing for a comprehensive infrastructure, but at the very minimum, the transportation bill to get refunded. But this report clearly shows out, item by item, the benefits to job creation, the benefits to energy efficiency, the benefits to reducing greenhouse gases. On every point that we would care about what we pass on to our kids and grandkids, this report hits right on, and that's why I congratulated the authors at the start. And for us not to mobilize around it would be a shame, and we intend to mobilize our local unions around this issue after the election in the lame duck session and ongoing if needed.
This is Mike Langford. Let me just add to that. Every one of us on this call have been talking about these issues at different forums throughout the country, and we do it at a pretty high level and, a variety of different forums. And it's all starting to come together because people are starting to take note that this is a serious problem. And, you know, we were just able to pass legislation in California on the methane leakage out of the natural gas pipeline system. You have over 100,000 miles of pipeline in California alone, about 2 million throughout this nation. And that legislation in California is to where they can no longer allow gas just to vent into the atmosphere. So we're making a small scratch state by state, but we do need federal legislation to oversee this and to help fund it. But the fact is that we are all living and preaching and talking what these issues at hand and what this report says. Now it's collectively under one document, so therefore I feel good that we can really expand and get this into more people's hands. So that's where we're committed to as utility workers.
Thanks, Mike. And just a reminder, you can find this report on our website at bluegreenalliance.org/makingthegrade. Thank you for all participating on the call today, and thank you for all the reporters and all your questions.